Matthew chapter 28, verses 1 to 15. Matthew 28. After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here, he has risen. Just as he said, come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped their feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders, devised a plan that they gave to the soldiers, gave a large sum of money, telling them, "You have to say that his disciples came during the night and stole him away while you were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if we can get the PowerPoint on here, please, Darius. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Paul, the Apostle Paul here, one of the writers, he asked this question: if Christ has not been raised, he gives a couple of things. He said, if Christ is not raised, then we of all men most miserable. Right, some look at some Christians, they're miserable even though he's been raised. But he says, look, if Christ has not been raised, then we're to be pitied. It all hinges on the resurrection of Jesus. It is critical that we're confident in this for our own sake and for the sake of our sharing and our witnessing and our talking with other people. You see, if Christ is not raised, then our faith is in vain. If Christ has not been raised from the dead, then we have no hope. There is no "I will rise." There is just nothingness. There is nothing ultimately good to look forwards to. And that's our hope, isn't it? That's our faith. That's our confidence. That's what the Bible says. And that's what Jesus wants us to have, a knowledge and a confidence that strengthens us and keeps us going through the difficult times. Hope is the most important thing that we have. The hope that it's not always going to be better, that it's not always going to be this way. I want, in a few minutes, and it is a few minutes that I'm going to share with you this morning, to try and do two things. I want to help you be confident in yourself, in what you believe. I'm going to give you some grounds why what you believe stacks up. Okay, so it's not particularly a Bible study this morning. But I'm going to try and back up this idea so that you can be sure that you're able to have a sensible reason for the hope that you have within you. And in the second instance, so that instead of just being on the back foot and defensive when people question, that actually you can be on the front foot in taking out and being positive and being confident. But I do think sometimes as Christians these days, we kind of wait for people to come to us with the criticisms and then we respond. What we need to be is people that are confident enough to go and put other people on the defensive. Those who are skeptics, those who don't believe, let them do the answering. Because they're the ones that are going to have to answer to God. They need to be thinking about these things. So I hope that the four little things that I'll share with you this morning, well, there's a lot more to it, but in 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, we'll try and get through four things. Four of the best reasons, in a way, why we can believe what really happened. So we're going to look at the fact of the fact there was no body there. We're going to look at the way the disciples were changed. We're going to look at the fact that Jesus appeared to so many different people over such a long period of time, and the fact the Bible itself can be trusted. So number one, the fact that there was no body to display. The resurrection of Jesus was the central message of the early disciples and the early Christians, the followers of Jesus. It was compelling as the disciples, the 11 remaining disciples, told others about Jesus, that he'd died and he'd come back to life. And thousands of people believed them. At first, the Jewish authorities were inclined to say, it will blow over. It will, you know, it will pass. There's been other movements that have come up and said, made claims. It will pass. It will blow itself out. But it didn't. It didn't. And more people started to follow Jesus. More and more people became convinced in their heads and in their hearts of the reality of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And it became a major headache. A major problem for those who denied that Jesus had risen from the dead. Now, there were those, as there are now, that want to say it didn't really happen. Did you notice at the end of the reading that Lorna read for us on that first morning, there were skeptics. There were those who wanted to deny that it happened. The Jews bribed the Roman soldiers to say they came and stole his body. They wanted to deny. They wanted to play it down. There have always been deniers. And it's no different today. And people today will come up with all kinds of things, all kinds of reasons. They will say, well, the disciples, the early Christians were guilty. It was just wishful thinking. You know, they thought so much of Jesus. They just wanted it to happen. Or maybe there was a kind of a resurrection of hope in their heart. They'd been crushed when Jesus was crucified. But a few days later, they got over it. They realized it had happened. And they pulled themselves together. And it was kind of just, they got over it. And there was a resurrection of hope in their hearts. Had that have been the case, and these disciples are claiming that Jesus has risen from the dead, and the Jewish authorities wanted to disprove that Jesus had come back from the life, from the dead, what would have been the easiest thing for them to do? Wouldn't they have gone to the grave? Wouldn't they have gone and brought out the body and said, look, here he is. Put him on display so that everybody could see. That would have once and for all have quashed this idea that Jesus had come back from the dead. But they didn't. Because they couldn't. Because the tomb was empty. Jesus wasn't there. Some people want to fancifully say, well, they got the tomb muddled up, didn't they? You know, when the women went to the tomb, they got the wrong tomb and they went to the wrong place. I mean, that's just so preposterously ridiculous. You know, because the same thing, they're saying he's risen from the dead. Look, there's an empty tomb. Well, yeah, let's take you to the right tomb. Let's take the stone up. You know, it's just utterly ridiculous. The fact that there wasn't a body there gives us huge confidence. The fact that the authorities could not produce the body. The fact that the Jews had to try and bribe the Romans into saying that the body was stolen. It doesn't stack up, does it? So at that level, we can have confidence. The second thing is just the way the disciples were changed. If you know the Bible story, you'll know that one by one, they all left Jesus on the night that he was betrayed. And when he was at the cross, none of them were there. Peter, the most outspoken of them, he had verbally denied that he knew anything to do with Jesus. They'd run, they were scared. After Jesus had been killed, they met together, But they were in a locked room, and the Bible tells us they were there for fear of the Jews. They were frightened. They did not expect it to happen. When they'd first been told that the body wasn't there, their first thought was not, oh, he's risen like he told us he would do. Isn't that great? It was like, I don't know what's going on here. You read the Bible, that's what it was like. They didn't believe it. They were astonished. They were amazed. It took them time to believe it. So these were frightened, these were scared, these were skeptical people. They were not expecting Jesus to rise from the dead. And yet we find that a few days later and within weeks, these same men and the women who were believing were standing up fearlessly in the courtyard of the temple in the midst of their enemies, fearlessly declaring that Jesus had come back to life, that he was the Messiah, he was the Son of God, that he was the one that they should be following. He was the rescuer from sin and shame, and that all men ought to be bowing the knee before King Jesus. It's those same men who were putting their lives on the line. It's these same men that would not be cowed into submission when the authorities started to arrest them, put them in prison and execute them. These same people enduring beatings and imprisonment, loss of life and loss of livelihoods for the sake of Jesus. What else could explain such a dramatic turnaround in their thinking? It's been said that some people will suffer for what they believe to be true. And we see that a lot today, don't we? There's a lot of people that believe things to be true, and they will suffer. They will do all kinds of things. But no one is prepared to do that for something they know is a lie. Some people will suffer for what they believe to be true. But no one, unless, you know, they're not properly connected, no one will die for someone, for something they know is a lie. These people did. They were not lying. They believed it to be true. The change around can only be explained by what they saw. They were not living in make-believe land. They would not come up with some mind-over-matter plan. These changed disciples can only really be explained by the fact of the resurrection of Jesus that they came to see and know and experience. The third thing, the fact that so many people saw him alive. I think we must not forget that Jesus was seen, not just by the disciples, but by all kinds of people, and many of them, over a 40-day period before he was raised back up into heaven. There was an ever-growing number of people, sane, able-minded, intelligent people that testified consistently that Jesus had appeared to them, that he'd shown them visible proofs, that he'd spoken to them, that he ate with them, that he'd talked with them. These people were not senile. They were not some impressionable adolescents, but were women, skeptical men, people on their travels. There was one time when there were 500 people in one place that saw Jesus. Some people will say, well, they were hallucinating. 500 people do not hallucinate the same thing all at the same time. It doesn't work like that. And then you've got the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was, to start with, the arch enemy of Jesus. He hated him. His life was given over to eradicating the Jesus movement. But he came to meet the risen Lord Jesus one day. An extraordinary event, but the point is it changed his life. Many of you will have heard the expression, a Damascus Road experience. A dramatic experience, an about turn. Well, that was what happened to Paul that day. Now, he lived just a few years. He would have lived concurrent with Jesus. But once he'd been converted and became convinced that Jesus was who he said he was, he was on Jesus' side, and he was as passionate for Jesus as he'd been as passionate against him beforehand. And he wrote a lot of things. A lot of what he wrote is in the Bible. One of the main letters that he wrote, one of the key letters, is the letter to the Corinthian church, the Corinthians, believers that lived in the city of Corinth. And just from a number of conversations that I've had recently, I've just been caused to go back into and have a look at the kind of the history of that letter. And one of the things I've found is that very, very few recognized scholars and authorities on these things doubt that Paul actually wrote 1 Corinthians. There are all kinds of arguments about some of the other books of the Bible, but very few, even the most ardent critics of Christianity, they don't doubt that Paul actually wrote the letter of 1 Corinthians. That was written probably about 20, 30 years at most after Jesus died. And in that letter, Paul wrote about the resurrection of Jesus and the fact of the resurrection of Jesus. There would have been people alive at that time, had it not have been true, that would have been able to say it didn't happen. Which takes us on to the fourth thing, the fact that the Bible is reliable. We need to, people criticize the Bible. Number of people that I come across that just assume that the Bible was written kind of like 300-400 years after the event. Or believe that it's changed over time. Now, I can understand, I have a little bit of tolerance with people who say, well, it was written, you know, at that time, but surely the church has changed it. That's a reasonable enough assumption for people to make, apart from the fact it's not right. But we really do need to get people understanding that the Bible was written just a few years after Jesus. The New Testament was written just a few years after Jesus. It wasn't 200, 300, 400 years after the event. Matthew and John were two of the disciples. They lived with Jesus. They wrote first-hand eyewitness accounts. Mark was one of the other writers. He was best friends with Peter, who was one of the other disciples. He also knew Luke, and Luke was a historian who checked out his story. He spoke to people, and he starts off the letter, I have looked back, and I can write to you an orderly account of what I've found out about Jesus. He was a historian who lived just a few years afterwards, able to talk to eyewitnesses. You see, this is why we do not need to be on the defensive. We don't need to feel threatened by people who say, but it was written a long time afterwards, because it wasn't. It was written by people who have closely connected to Jesus and just a few years afterwards. And if you go into any kind of research and these kind of things about history, usually the best documents are the earliest documents, those that were written nearest to the time. These were written very near to the time of Jesus. But was it changed? Wasn't the Bible changed? Didn't the church? Many of you will have read the Da Vinci Code and that kind of novel. That was a make-believe story, all right? Remember that? It was a make-believe story. But one of the lines in there is that the church changed what was written. They changed the original manuscripts. They changed as things went on so it would fit the church's agenda. Well, one of the things that we've got in the through archaeology is over time, the manuscript, we don't have any of the original manuscripts. We don't have any of the original letters that were written by Paul. We don't have the original bit that was written by Matthew or Mark. We don't have that. But we do have copies, and the copies we have go back very close to the time when they were written. And we've got lots of them. And so what the experts are able to do is they're able to compare the earliest copies with what we have here now. And the remarkable thing is that there is a huge correlation of the earliest documents and what we have here. It hasn't changed that much. It really hasn't changed that much at all. One or two little differences we can't understand. But nothing that changes the teaching, nothing that changes the main doctrines, the main emphasis, the key points of the Bible. It hasn't changed. So people say, but it's changed, the church changed. No, it did not. Don't be ashamed to tell people. And when they ask them, tell them to prove it to you. Put them on the back foot. We've got a credible faith to believe. We've got these four things. The fact that there was no body to display. That has to be answered. The fact that the disciples were changed so much and were willing to die for what was being said. The fact that so many different people in different times and different places saw Jesus, heard him, watched him, touched him. And the fact that the Bible stands up to scrutiny can give us, in our own personal faith and commitment to Jesus, great confidence of what it says. Because if Jesus rose from the dead, then what did Jesus say? As you saw me go, I will come back. And I will take you to be where I am. That's our hope. When you struggle, when life is just hitting you on every side, you hold on to this. Hold on to the promises of Jesus. Take confidence in what you believe in Jesus, your Lord, who died and rose again for you. And when there's people who criticize you, try and put the boot on the other foot. Put them on the defensive. Because most of them, well, they say things and they've never looked at it. They just hear the wives' tales they get off EastEnders or Coronation Street or Richard Attenborough or David Attenborough, whichever one it is. They hear these things and it's folk religion. Brothers and sisters, Christians, let's be confident in what we've got. Jesus really did die on the cross. He really did rise again. And because of that, we can be confident. If he did not rise, then we are of all men most miserable, and our faith is in vain. But he did rise. And for that reason, we have hope and we have confidence in this life. And we know that one day we're going to be part of the new heaven and the new earth, where everything will be put back right and perfect. No more sorrow, no more pain. No more sin, no more suffering, no more tears. Ah, glorious day. There's a place where the streets shine. There's a place that the Bible conveys as a place of perfection and glory. We're going to sing about that in our last song. Music team, come and join us. Let's look forwards. Let's sing with joy and confidence and all that we have within us. There's a place where the streets shine with the glory of the Lamb. There's a way we can go there. We can live there beyond time because of you.